Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. I've been away on vacation for about 3 weeks, but you probably didn't notice because the programs just kept coming while I was gone, thanks to the technology of pre-recording. Today's program is called Thinking of You, and it's like a postcard that I'm sending to you from my travels around the Canadian Rockies. And I really was thinking of you and all people with vision problems many times during my trip. First of all, I was thinking of you when I was in every large city that I visited. The crosswalks were all, without fail, equipped with those audible signals, letting people with vision problems know when it's safe to cross the street. Those little chirps were everywhere. Hats off to the Canadians. Then, too, I was thinking of you in one of the fancy hotels when I heard a very friendly voice in the elevator announcing the floors. It wasn't just a series of beeps to tell you what floor you're on, but an actual pleasant voice saying, second floor, third floor. How nice. How very nice. At another hotel, I was really thinking of you when I noticed the carpet in the hallway. How could I help but notice it? It made me extremely dizzy and off balance and even a little bit disoriented. I had to not look down at it and sort of hold on to the wall as I walked along the hallway. It was awful. But I realized I can't even begin to describe what the pattern was like. All I know is that it really played tricks with my vision. Bad choice of carpet. Canadian currency that I used all the time is also very user-friendly for people who are blind. A Wikipedia article explains that it's called the Canadian Currency Tactile Feature. It's found on most of the Canadian banknotes or bills. It helps aid people who are visually impaired to identify the notes. The feature indicates the banknote denomination in the upper left-hand corner of the face side of the bill. And to do this, they use a series of raised dots. It was suggested by Bruno Thoreau, an administrator for the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. It was designed by Dr. Susan Letterman, a professor of psychology at Queen's University. It is similar in appearance to Braille, but it differs because standard Braille was deemed too sensitive. The currency denomination must be recognized easily and quickly. Thus, the banknotes use full Braille blocks or cells of all six dots. The $5 bill has one cell. This is in the upper left-hand corner. $5 bill has one cell, with the $10, $20, and $50 denominations each having one more cell than the previous amount. The $100 bill has two cells arranged in such a way that there is a space of two empty cells between them. The Canadians do not have single-dollar bills, but have coins worth $1 and $2. The loonie, their $1 coin, is quite similar in size to the toonie, their $2 coin. But in reality, they can be distinguished quite easily. The loonie, called that because there is a picture of a loon on the coin, is gold in color, and it actually has 11 sides. This is a nod to the similarly shaped American Susan B. Anthony dollar coin. The toonie, their $2 silver-colored coin, has a raised medallion of a different color in the center, easily making it feel and look different than the loonie. Their other coins, like American coins, are quite easy to distinguish because of their size. But I noticed that with their similarly sized quarters and nickels, the quarter has ridges on the edges, and the nickel has smooth edges. They do have small, thin dimes, but hey, talk about making things simple. They do not have pennies. They simply round up or down when making change. I love not having all that little stuff in my change purse. I was also thinking of you while I was browsing in the White Museum in Banff, Alberta. I discovered a scrapbook with newspaper clippings featuring Helen Keller. Apparently, she visited Banff in about 1939 as part of their Indian Day celebration and was honored by the Stoney First Nations tribe. There was a picture of her. The caption reads as follows: American author Helen Keller, wearing traditional Native American costume, receives an emblematic white plume from Stoney Indian chief Walking Buffalo. This was at her investiture as a blood sister of the tribe in Banff, Alberta, Canada, in 1939. She was given the name White Plume and the honorary title of chief. Keller was only the second white woman to receive this honor. And once again, this was in 1939 in Banff, Alberta, Canada. Later in my trip, while I was in Whistler, where the 2010 Olympic and Paralympics were held, I was also thinking of you. I stood at the spot in Whistler Village where the crowds gathered when the medals were awarded. Of course, the Olympics were represented by the famous five interlocking rings. But I discovered We saw the interlocking rings, but I discovered an interesting symbol which they adopted for the 2010 Paralympic Winter Games. It was called Agitos. It's spelled A-G-I-T-O-S. A little sign in the garden surrounding this symbolic sculpture explained that the word Agitos is based on the Latin word for I move. The three forms which I was standing next to collectively represented the role of the International Paralympic Committee in bringing together athletes from around the world. The overall sculpture was about 10 feet tall and consisted of three almost touching shapes. Each one looked like a big apostrophe. Each gray metallic shape was standing tall on its own pedestal, and each one had a stripe of a different color, red in the one on the left, blue on the middle one, and green on the right-hand one. The three, taken together, were tipped at different angles, almost, to me, showing the transfer of motion from the left to the right. Interesting sculpture, to say the least. A symbol meaning I move from the 2010 Paralympics in Whistler, B.C. Thinking of you once again. In another museum-like setting, the Chinese Cultural Center in Vancouver, our guide told us everything that was very interesting about all the objects in the collection. Early on, he surprised us by saying that we could touch even the most valuable objects, but we could use only one finger. I was thinking of you. I especially loved the tabletop with bats carved into the top. Now, normally I really don't like bats very much, but these were different. The wood was beautiful, the bats quite delicate, their wings almost touching, creating a wreath-like circle of bats. The story that went with that bat table was even better. Chinese people value bats because the word bat in Chinese is similar to the word for luck in Chinese. Thus, bats mean good luck to Chinese people. It was nice to be able to trace those bats, using one finger, of course. Next, from the star.com website, this headline reads, "Blind MP to draft Canada's first national accessibility law." Carla Qualtro, a former Paralympian and human rights lawyer, is seeking input on the legislation. A picture accompanying the article shows her standing at a podium in front of a large red and white background poster that says, in both English and French, "What does an accessible Canada mean to you?" She is flanked by red and white Canadian flags on both sides of her. She is wearing a black suit jacket over a bright turquoise blouse, has short blonde hair, and wears black framed glasses. The article is by Laurie Monsebraten, social justice reporter for The Star. The article starts, "Carla Qualtro, who was legally blind, grew up learning alternative ways of doing almost everything. A quote, when I was growing up, it was called accommodation, but today it's called innovation," said Qualtro, age 44, Canada's, get this title now, Canada's Federal Minister of Sport and first ever minister responsible for people with disabilities. The human rights lawyer, former Paralympian and World Championship swimming medalist, is helping Canadians think about disability in a new way as she crafts the country's first national accessibility legislation. Under the current legal framework, people with disabilities can only defend their rights once they have been ignored, a process the minister called exhausting, expensive, and fairly burdensome. A quote, "When systems and spaces are accessible, every Canadian wins. Barriers are bad for business," Qualtrough told a gathering at Whitby's Ability Center, where she announced a series of national roundtable and town hall meetings. The government has received more than 700 submissions since online consultations on the new law began. Canadians have until February of 2017, or rather they had until February of this year, to give their views. Qualtrough will report on the consultations next spring. Stay tuned. The story continues in a little while about this situation. But the article now says she'll report on the consultations next spring and said she hopes to have legislation ready to introduce to the Commons by the end of 2017 or early 2018. The MP from Delta, British Columbia, where I was, said she was thrilled when Prime Minister Justin Trudeau gave her the double-barrel portfolio encompassing her two life passions and told her to go out and change the world. Huh, no pressure there, she quipped. The creation of this cabinet position makes it very clear that people with disabilities are important to our government, she said, and that we deserve to be considered in every decision around the cabinet table. Just as Ginger Rogers once noted how she had to perform the same artistic feats as her dance partner, Fred Astaire, but backwards and in high heels, people with disabilities are masters of innovation, Qualtrough said. Imagine the creativity that persons with disabilities must employ every day to navigate buildings, products, and services that were not designed with their needs in mind, she said. Development of creative products, ways of doing things, and ultimately a different way of looking at the world are key to Canada's quest for accessibility, she added. Qualtrough, who has worked in human rights at both the federal and provincial levels and served as staff for several Liberal cabinet ministers on Parliament Hill between 1999 and 2005, knows her way around Ottawa, the capital of Canada. But the busy mother of four, including two teenage stepchildren and her own 6 and 3-year-old kids, admits she hesitated when she was asked to run for office a year and a half ago. She's glad she took the plunge. She said, "It's a very interesting time in the evolution of disability rights. For the government to create a cabinet position and to give it to someone with a disability, this is a big deal," she added. Toronto lawyer David Lepofsky, co-chair of a group called Barrier Free Canada, which called for a national law during last year's election, is also excited about Qualtrough's appointment and her mandate. He said, "It's great that the federal government is going to do a national consultation on this to hear from people," said Lepofsky, who is blind. Canada is late to the table when it comes to accessibility legislation. The United States has had the Americans with Disabilities Act since 1990. The landmark Accessibility for Ontarians and Disabilities Act was introduced in 2005 with a goal of making the province fully accessible by 2025. Ontario's experience will help guide the federal law, Qualtrough said. But she will also be looking at how other provinces and countries legislate accessibility, and learn from their successes and shortcomings. One of Qualtrough's main goals is to develop a common definition for disability that would apply to all federal laws and regulations and eventually be adopted by the provinces. Quote, "Let's try and harmonize our approach to disability across the federal government. That would be huge for Canadians." Qualtrough expects public consultations, the country's first national conversation about accessibility, will provide valuable input for Ottawa's legislation and other federal programs such as Canada Pension Plan, Disability Benefit, the Disability Tax Credit, and the Registered Disability Savings Plan. It may even show provincial and municipal governments where they're coming up short. She said, "We know we are going to hear way more than what's going to be covered by the law, and that is intentional. These consultations may also bolster calls for a basic or guaranteed income for people with disabilities," said Qualtro, who was personally in favor of that idea. She said it's something that could certainly come out of this, not as an actual program, but a direction that Canadians want the government to look into, she said. But can we afford to make Canada more accessible and boost support for people with disabilities? I don't think we can afford not to, Qualtro said. With our labor shortages and our aging population and all the challenges in society, if we don't get this right, we will be missing a huge opportunity. And unfortunately, next, we have an update on Carla Qualtro. This is sort of like breaking news, I guess you could say. This came from a website, straight.com. A legally blind rookie parliamentarian from the Lower Mainland is now overseeing one of the Trudeau government's hottest political potatoes. The MP from Delta, British Columbia, Carla Qualtro, was named Minister of Public Services and Procurement in today's federal cabinet shuffle. This makes her the overseer of the Phoenix pay system, which has been mired in problems. Qualtro was moved into her position after serving as the Minister of Sport and Persons with Disabilities. And I was very sorry to hear that she is no longer serving as that Minister of Persons with Disabilities cabinet level post in Canada. But maybe she set the tone for the future. Now, also while I was away, I read a newspaper that I found in almost all the hotel lobbies. It's called The Globe. It covers news from all over Canada, similar to our USA Today, I suspect. This one, the article is titled ABC Life Literacy Canada Announcement. The Pacific Training Center for the Blind from Victoria, BC, and Victoria, BC is a beautiful city, by the way. Pacific Training Center for the Blind is there, and they were awarded $20,000 as the top winner of the Great West Life, London Life, and Canada Life Literacy Innovation Award. ABC Life Literacy Canada, ABC, is proud to announce the winners of the 2017 Literacy Innovation Award. This is abbreviated LIA. The LIA recognizes organizations that develop and implement innovative adult literacy and essential skills programs in communities across Canada. This year, the award will be bestowed upon one top winner and four honorable mention winners. This year's winning programs address the needs of underserved populations and empower learners by helping them improve their literacy skills, gain valuable experience and expertise, and build strong ties to their communities. Winning programs demonstrate a significant impact on the lives of their clients, enabling learners to use the skills they have developed to affect positive change in their lives and the lives of those around them. This year's winners, this is a quote, represent the spirit of diversity, inclusivity, and community that we hope to foster in the adult literacy field, said Mac Rogers, who's executive director of ABC Life Literacy in Canada. He continues, "We are thankful to our partners, Great West Life, London Life, and Canada Life, for helping us highlight these innovative initiatives and the important work they do in their communities." And then Debbie Down, who's manager of community relations, says the winner represents an impressive field of programs that are helping underserved populations make improvements in their lives by giving them the skills and training that they need. Here we go. Trumpets, please. The top winner is receiving $20,000, the Pacific Training Center for the Blind in Victoria, BC. The title of the program is Blind People in Charge. Blind People in Charge serves blind, deafblind, and low-vision adults in Greater Victoria and has expanded to serve students from across the country, housing out-of-town students during their training with Pacific Training Center for the Blind. It is the only program of its kind in Western Canada that uses an empowering, problem-solving model of instruction where blind people are the teachers, planners, directors, and administrators. Instructors teach non-visual independence and literacy skills such as Braille, adaptive technology, cane travel, and cooking. The essential and life skills developed through the program allow learners to improve their living conditions and quality of life, as well as find gainful employment. Although Braille is the official system of reading and writing for the blind, it's not being taught to most of the blind children or to adults who lose their vision, which has led to a literacy crisis among blind people. The inability to read Braille serves as a barrier to employment and independence. As a result of the training they received at the Pacific Training Center for the Blind, students have gone on to lead more independent lives, acquire paid employment, and one student even started his own business. Next, from a website, I found Kamloops This Week is the name of the website. I was in Kamloops, a city I really hadn't heard too much about until this trip. This one is called The Blind Kid Chases His Dream by Dave Eagles, and the dateline was September of last year. Slouching on a concrete bench on MacArthur Island, Brett Devlew looks like any other 21-year-old skateboarder. He wears his hat backwards, and he hits the jumps like any other kid with mad skills. It's not until a red and white cane appears does it become apparent that Devlew is blind. With only 1% vision left, Devlew has to create cues to help him navigate the skate park. Well-placed sneakers, they look red in a picture, well-placed sneakers mark the bottom and the top of a ramp, and these give Devlew enough contrast to help him know when to pop the trick. He can't do lines, which is the lingo for several tricks in a row, as he did before going blind, but he's okay with that. It's half speed from what he could skate before he lost his sight, but when Devlew uses his skateboard to get around, it's full speed ahead. With a friend in front, his cane in hand, Devlew can get a good feel of what's out there and where he's going. He recalls a recent skate with a friend along the roads of Los Angeles, exploring street after street. He said, "I just used my cane so people knew I was blind. So, hey, if they hit me with a car, I get more money," he said. Speaking of his wittiness, Devlew said, "It's gotten a lot better since I became blind. When I could see, I was super shy. I didn't talk much. If I made a joke, no one listened, no one laughed. Now it's like, 'Yeah, how's your morning?' 'Oh, my morning? Well, I just walked into a couple of walls, a couple of chairs. I apologized to two of them. No one was really there, so it was a good morning." Devlew said his parents were impacted more than he was when he lost his sight. He was sitting in class in Winnipeg during the last month of school in 2012 when he felt something was very wrong with his vision. He walked himself to a local eye doctor's office during his lunch hour. "I said, 'What's wrong?' The doctor said, 'You just went from 20/50 vision to 20 over 2,500 in a matter of seconds. This is not small, this is big,'" Devlew recalled. A quick phone call to his parents was how his mother found out that her son went blind. Devlew was found to have two genetic mutations. One was a DNA mutation called Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. "Over the next few months, getting progressively worse, both of my parents sat me down and said, because of how strong I am, they could keep going. They are very supportive." Devlew continued to skateboard, a love of his since he was six. With the help of his mother's co-workers, Devlew was given an iPad with an added voice software program that enabled him to communicate in new ways. The gift became the impetus for Devlew to start what he calls the Blind Kid Foundation, seeing $1 from every one of his T-shirt sales go into the fund. Since that foundation began, Devlew said he has been able to give away 4 iPads to blind students living in Winnipeg. Well, a one-way ticket to Kamloops, B.C. has Devlew following his dreams. "You can't really chase your dreams by sitting at home," he said. Devlew's future plans include looking to record his own music, continuing to expand the Blind Kid Foundation clothing line, and searching out more followers in British Columbia and California. Now he's working on completing a documentary of his journey, and he hopes to land a booking on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Okay, a final quick one. If you know Canada, you know that everyone is a hockey fan. So this program would not be complete without a hockey story. The from Calgary, Alberta, legally blind girl embraces the chance to watch her beloved Flames. This is the NHL hockey team from Calgary. An 11-year-old girl with a visual impairment sees the opportunity to literally see her favorite hockey team in action for the first time in her life. Olivia Lettich attended Sunday afternoon's Flames game against the New York Islanders at the Scotiabank Saddledome as a guest of the team. I actually stood in front of the Saddledome, pointing my way to that so that I could send the picture to my grandkids, who are definite hockey fans. But anyhow, back to the story. In the months after her birth, Olivia was diagnosed with bilateral retinoblastoma, a rare form of eye cancer. She underwent chemotherapy and radiation treatment, but her right eye was lost to the disease, and vision in her left eye was severely impaired, where she is considered legally blind. An organization called eSight, small e, capital S-I-G-H-T, has created an assistive device to allow people like Olivia to see the world surrounding them. These glasses, they're actually like a set of goggles that you put over your eyes. These glasses are equipped with a high-speed camera that records and then transmits the images to the headset. Olivia said, "It's so cool. These glasses help me see so much better, and I can read. I can watch things from far away." Well, while Olivia watched and cheered from the stands, the Flames routed the Islanders 5-2 to extend the team's winning streak. Following the game, the Calgary Flames arranged an opportunity for Olivia to meet her three favorite players, Mark Giordano, Sean Monahan, and Johnny Gaudreau. Johnny is also called Johnny Hockey. Well, exciting night for that little girl using eSight glasses at the Saddledome in Calgary, Alberta. Well, the program ends this week with a quote from Helen Keller, who seems to endorse travel when she said, "Life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all." Thinking of you, and thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.